Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Super Together. I am James Cochran, and with me today is the esteemed, renowned Michelle L. Worley, LMFT from Great Oaks Therapy Town. She is an Enneagram 7, and she's going to talk with us today about what the heck that is slash means. So Michelle, who are you?
I am a human first. That is important. There is room for everyone. So that's the whole purpose behind what I do and why I do it. I own Great Oaks Therapy Center in the Westport area of Kansas City, where we have all sorts of amazing humans who are therapists as well at different stages of their education. And I'm a wife of almost 20 years and a mom for 10 years to two amazingly different children. And yeah, that's me.
Okay. So there's room for everybody. The reason I asked you to come on is because something that you guys are doing caught my eye. It is about the Ennea something or other.
Yes.
And yeah. I gather that it's got Graham in it. So it is either some form of communication like a telegram or something like that, or it is a shape of some kind. What is the Enneagram? Because I keep hearing about it, and I gather that our listeners might have heard about it.
Yeah, well, I imagine that they have. So it actually translates literally in Greek to drawing of nine. Oh. So it's a personality model that, I mean, actually the origins of it are disputed and unclear, and I'm not a five, so that might pique your interest, and you can do
that. My eyebrows literally just went up as you said the origins are disputed. You say
disputed, yes, there needs to be, but they can link it back to a lot of different traditions. So even like mathematical traditions, philosophical traditions, spiritual. That is not as much of interest to me, although I'm curious about it. I'm not going to be the one to go and do that research, but you might, and then we'll come back and talk about that another time. But it's a really cool personality model that offers insight into our defaults. So like our default responses. So it's more about understanding what motivates our behavior so that we can better understand ourselves.
So drawing of nine, I would imagine what that means. And for our listeners, I know the answers to most of the questions that I'm going to ask today, but I was surprised, you know, that it means drawing of nine. How does that translate into, so for example, you and I have said that you're an Enneagram 7, I'm an Enneagram 5. What does that mean broadly? So people fall into one of these 1 through 9 categories?
Yes. And this is a topic that can go way deeper than I'll bring it today because there's just not time.
Sure.
But the nine means there are nine basic types that people will find themselves responding out of. So for me, example, I'm a 7. There's a basic fear and childhood story generally, or not generally, there is a basic fear and childhood story assigned to each type. So the basic fear of the 7 is being deprived or in pain. And the childhood story is that we found comfort in imagination and creativity, in seeking pleasure out of that desire to have those needs met that were unmet. So each of the types, it's just a guide to help you better understand yourself. And then once you understand yourself and you understand what motivates behaviors, that's what the Enneagram is teaching, is that it helps us increase our self-awareness and our emotional intelligence. It's a really cool tool.
Okay. Awesome. So we would all have a primary default that we operate out of. And presumably there are resources that exist, assessment tools that we can take that will sort of guide us toward, hey, this is where you're sort of operating from by default. And as a result of your awareness of that, then you can start to make more informed decisions about, you know, how you want to be, who you want to be, et cetera. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, exactly. There's paths of growth for each type, and there's paths that might tell you that you're in an unhealthier state. So in stress, in stress, I won't look so much like a 1 or a 7. I will look more like a 1 when I'm in stress.
Gotcha. And when I'm in stress, I know the answer to this. I wrote it down somewhere.
Cool.
No, I'm going to tell you. I know you know, but when I'm in stress, I'm a seven.
Yeah.
No?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a seven, which means that I throw caution to the wind and I am, let's buy a bicycle. Yeah. My wife will hear that and know what I'm talking about because I'm trying to convince her to let me buy a bicycle right now, which must be a reflection of my stress level. So the shape itself, this corresponds to like a diagram, and that diagram, based on where the arrows are pointing, would sort of indicate where we move in stress, where we move in safety, and then sort of how we function by default. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. So tell me, in your estimation, because you're a licensed marriage and family therapist, I know you've taken classes on assessment and diagnoses and personality types and all those different types of things. So help me see the distinctions maybe between Enneagram and things like the Myers-Briggs type indicator, the, you know, Clifton strength finders, things like that. Because there, it feels as though there are a myriad of tools out there to tell us sort of which, you know, sort of category we belong in. Help us understand why for you Enneagram feels unique.
Yeah. Well, in the way of the seven, I'm somewhat familiar with all of the different types. Or all the different strengths finders, Myers-Briggs, there's all sorts of color tests. There's a million different options. And we like, sevens like to try all of the different things. So whatever can possibly bring us away from pain, we are going to try it. So I'm familiar enough with several of them. And that's a question that's asked a lot. I think the first thing that I often say is that it's really important that you find the tool that works the best for you. Anything that will aid in understanding yourself better so that you can relate to the world in a healthier way is going to be a good tool for you. So that's important. That's a really important piece before I talk about any differences. Okay. I do know that my Myers-Briggs type is ENFP for people that care more about the Myers-Briggs. I mean, I think it helps them see why and how I do what I do.
Are all sevens ENFPs?
I do not think, no. Mm-mm. And not all sevens are even extroverts. I actually had to come to terms with the fact that I'm an extrovert during this period of time. I have not identified myself as an extrovert. I am usually the last person to identify myself pretty accurately. When I announced to the world that I was a seven, the number of people that responded like, we know. We already know. So not surprising to people. So back to your original question though. So a lot of the research I've read says the Enneagram is more focused on like the nurture piece. So if we look at it, nature versus nurture, the Enneagram seems to be more focused on that, like what lies in the impact of our upbringing on our childhood stories. So Myers-Briggs is seen to be more focused on the impact of nature. There's more of a holistic view with the Enneagram. Although anything I say that I'm seeing as differences, people that are really more in line with Myers-Briggs could possibly argue. I would imagine that they would argue it because that's the one that they have found that's the most helpful.
Yeah. So I think part of what you're pointing to is this idea that there is, to the degree that each of us are trying to find a way of understanding ourselves that is going to help us be more the people that we want to be, our most authentic selves, we need to find a tool that works for us. And that might be MBTI, that might be strength finders, that might be go wash your face, girl wash your face. You know, it could be any number of those resources. Enneagram is one of those. And there are some things about Enneagram that feel to you more holistic, more, you know, takes into account a lot of different dimensions of the personal experience. One of the things that I have found that I like about the Enneagram is that it doesn't say you're this and everybody, and you know, and then that person is that, and that person is that. It's I'm a five, but here's where I move when I'm under stress. I'm a five, but here's where I move when I'm kind of my best self. I'm a five, and here's the sort of triad I belong to, you know, as we consider, you know, where do we sort of generate our motivational energy and those types of things. I think that there's a lot of unitedness that happens in the Enneagram that says we are all part of the same nine. What is it? Nine. We're all part of that, and we move about that. Even if we do, again, as I like your use of the word default, that puts us in a place where this is home base. But you know, if you've ever played baseball or watched baseball or another sport that has a home base. You don't just stay on home right. base. You got to move around based on what the game calls for. So how do you see, like in your life, you've mentioned that you're a seven, you mentioned announcing to the world that you're a seven, you mentioned your experience of being a seven in the space of quarantine, for example. How do you sort of move through your life in the knowledge that you're a seven? How does that help you be the best you?
So I like to give examples when I'm asked questions like this, because it helps make sense of it for sure. me. So in a leadership role, so first of all, I have read and listened to enough podcasts and books about the Enneagram that have sent some kind of message that sevens should be neither therapist nor leader. And I have found myself in both of those roles. And it's not surprising, like in unhealth, we are going all over the place. Like my husband refers to me in the more unhealthy place as a dart. And I don't really have a bullseye that I'm going for. I'm just trying to get away from whatever pain I'm in the moment. And so, you know, for him, it's really helpful for our relationship, for him to know that when I'm in a stress, like in a stressful situation, not to take it personally. So to be able to move towards me and know like, okay, so this is a default place of hers and she's not trying to, you know, just be a jerk. She's actually just in a place of pain. And so he's able to have more compassion towards me in that time. Leadership roles as a seven, I've worked with a number of personalities that are really different than mine. So the way it's helped in those roles is by being aware of myself. So being aware of what's coming up for me and then being aware of like what the motivation is for another person if they're asking me for guidance in any area. So a one, this has happened a lot. This is not that everyone is like every Enneagram one is like this, but a lot of Enneagram ones that I've interacted with, when they're in crisis or in a place where they need guidance from me, they just want to know the right thing to do. Like they want to make the right decision. And so when they're asking me for guidance, they don't need me to come up with all sorts of creative ideas, all sorts of fun ways they can address the problem. They just want to know what the right thing to do is. And so I am able through the lens of the Enneagram to understand that that's what they're looking for.
Sure. There's a relational dynamic here right? So there is by understanding, you know, where a person's home base is and where they're going to move based on their current sort of stress space. So it's helpful, for example, for me to hear that from you. My wife is a one. And so hearing this idea that, okay, when ones are stressed, they just want to know, you know, what the right thing to do is. For the Frozen 2 fans out there, they want to know how to do the next right thing.
Yeah.
My awareness of that isn't, it's Enneagram isn't just for me, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So there's a way in which I can't remember what my Myers-Briggs type is, but that type is something that I might understand as, okay, so here's where I'm going to thrive. Here's what I'm going to need along this particular plane or dimension. But my awareness of not just my Enneatype, which some people call it, do you call it Enneatype?
I think there's actually an app that is Enneatype. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to like buzz market any kind of brand name or anything.
No.
But knowing someone else's Enneatype, Enneagram number, gives me potential guidance on how I might interact with them, how to offer them what they need most, or at a minimum, a place to start, right? Because I think that we would want to allow them some agency in informing, you know, what it is that they need, but gives us a sense of, okay, here's likely where they're coming from or how I can interpret their behavior based on what I understand about them. Are there other ways you see in relationships in particular, since we're super together as a relationships podcast, are there other ways where you see Enneagram showing up and being helpful for relationships?
Oh, big time. I mean, I'm just thinking of, and I don't claim to be an expert. I hope to one day. I hope to claim to be an expert. But if I think of fives and ones, the first thing that pops in my head is this respect for personal boundaries. And this is where it's really important that it's not a putting you in a five box and putting her in a one box. It's that at a kind of a basic level of the Enneagram that there's these tendencies. And so there can be a respect for the other person's need for boundaries. It's would be interesting to have a conversation with the two of you around when you both think you're right. Because if fives are generally geared towards having as much knowledge as they can and they find safety in that, and ones want to do the right thing and they have a lot of knowledge too, like tons of knowledge. So that's an interesting dynamic between the two. So it'd be helpful for the two of you, I would imagine, to understand that, you know, if that topic comes up of who's right, that could cause some tension.
Sure. We default to my wife is right. Okay. And just work backwards from there, kind of based on what the situation calls mm-hmm. for. You know, and this is what I think I guide the couples that I work with toward a lot is you're each going to show up in an interaction with a particular combination of needs. And you're going to say, here's what, you know, I need. And you can either guess based on your experience with that person, based on your awareness of the context and all the other 85 different factors that play into that. Or you can make an informed guess based on how you understand their sort of default spaces to be based on something like the Enneagram. So knowing, for example, that my wife is a one shapes the way that when we sort of start out, I can start to, you know, my wife and I are in the process of tidying the house. And as a one, her, you know, the whole Marie Kondo, does it spark joy? That's a hard question for her to answer because she wants to make the right choice, the correct choice. She wants to sort of, and she wants to do it by all mm-hmm. the rules, by doing it, everything that Marie Kondo says. And that is not my inclination, generally speaking. But knowing that me just sort of dismissing her process as inefficient or unhelpful or, well, we should do it this way instead, that runs afoul of her sort of basic notions of how to do right. things. So more likely what I have to try to do is try to sort of meet her where she is, recognize what are her needs in this moment? How can we still meet those needs? Again, in the recognition that a one is where she's coming from, while also addressing whatever the problematic content mm-hmm. is that we have here in the space.
Absolutely.
So I think that hopefully, if Enneagram is something that you, again, you hear a lot about, but you don't have a lot of personal familiarity with, this sort of piques your interest. And again, part of the thing that I'm excited about is to point people toward you. You've got a thing that you're going to be doing focused on Enneagram. And I love the stuff that Great Oaks is putting together in this space of quarantine where sort of our normal access to resources like this are kind of drying mm-hmm. up. So tell us a little bit about what you've got planned. It's starting next week.
Yeah. Is that right? So starting Monday, would that be May 4th? That's mm-hmm. a perfect day for any Star Wars fans.
Star Wars Day.
Right. Yeah. So I just thought, you know, maybe it would be fun to have some conversations around the Enneagram, some conversation to step away from like current life stressors, to talk about something that can be fun, but also guide them towards knowing themselves better. So that's going to start on Monday. It'll be an hour and a half each week, and it'll be divided into four groups. So the first week will just be an introduction overview, a little more in depth than what we've talked about today. And then the weeks following will be each of the triads, which you mentioned, but each of the centers. So one week will be about 8, 9, and 1. So talking about those Enneagram types, and then the following weeks about the other.
And I know that I've found whenever I've studied the Enneagram, I think it would be easy to think, well, I'll just figure out what I am, and then I'll be done. When in reality, you know, when you listen and understand at a deeper level what each of those types is driven by, and kind of the animating stories that exist in their, you know, internal world, you start to think, that's my sister. Oh, okay, that's my mom. Okay, that's my cousin Dale. Your life is populated by people who have every sort of one of these numbers. And the more deeply you understand them, the easier it is for you to say, okay, well, here are the 12 people in my life that are ones. Here are the 14 people in my life that are twos, et cetera. The deeper your familiarity becomes with those different numbers, the more you can be conscientious about your interactions, mm-hmm. I think. So I think that this is a great resource. And if people want to find out more about that class, your practice, where can they go to find that in?
So they can go to www.greatoakstherapy.com or email hello@greatoakstherapy.com.
I like that. hello@greatoakstherapy.com. Michelle, any parting thoughts, things that you wanted to make sure that we got into that we didn't get a chance to talk about that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think one of the really important things, and you kind of spoke to it, is we can have an idea, like you could have an understanding that I'm a seven, but without actually knowing me and getting to know what mm-hmm. parts of being a seven really speak to who I am and what is motivating me, you can't truly know me. And so that is yeah. for anyone as they're like dipping their foot into the Enneagram. It would be really easy just to say, well, you're a three, so, or you're a two.
So I know everything, so I know everything about you.
Yeah. And it can't, like, humans are much more complex than that. And we really take away from some of the beauty of the process when we do that. It's really, really easy to do that. But just knowing that you only get to say what your number is, no one else gets to say, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, again, we want to use our awareness of other people to inform us, but we don't want that to take away from the relational gifts that we can share by getting to know somebody, learning about who they are. But no, that's a helpful clarification. Well, you can join us again on Fridays. Our episodes drop on Tuesdays and Fridays. I want to thank again Michelle Worley from Great Oaks Therapy Center for joining us to talk about the Enneagram. You can find out more about my practice at talkingwithjames.com. Michelle, we end the episode by saying be well. So I'll stop talking and then you can sign us out.
Be well.